is continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Please give a warm welcome to Peter from Florida. Thank you, Peter.
There we go. My name is Peter, recovered alcoholic, grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank the group for having me. I've never been out on this meeting. I know it's been going on for a while. I think you guys started during COVID or something like that. And so glad to be here. I'm on a short leash, as a buddy of mine says, a lot to talk about in a short time to do it with Step 10. June 23rd, 1988 is when God separated me from alcohol. I'm very grateful, especially as I inch closer to another AA birthday, which seems to be more important than my belly button birthday in June. I'm very grateful for this gift. I do have a home group. It's Alcoholics and God in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And I do have a sponsor out of Minnesota. His name is Bob Zahns. And I sponsor about a dozen men. Most of them know I sponsor them too. So that's always a good thing. I will tell you, just so you know where I've been, and I qualify to be here. I'm the guy on page 21, the real alcoholic. I take one drink and I need a second drink and I can't get out. And all my plans and designs that I had prior to taking the first drink are lost. I've been through 7 treatment centers way back when I was 19. I had no gray hair back then. It was interesting. But around 18, 19, I got into my first treatment center by way of my dad finding me, and I stole from him, and he put some of the pieces of the puzzle together about my delinquency in many areas and placed me in my first treatment center. And I will tell you, I had no idea of what an alcoholic was. And even if I did, I wasn't going to say I'm an alcoholic. My mom committed suicide when I was 14 years old, and bad things happened to me as a little guy growing up. I had a predator who was doing bad things to me. And I just thought I was mixed up and lost my way. And drinking seemed to allow me to navigate a lot better without feeling pain. At 14 years old, I got to tell you, my first drink, life was already painful. It was already uncomfortable. I had no GPS. My mind owned me. It was the filter for everything. I was afraid of my own shadow. I was afraid of speaking. I was afraid of being silent. Got lots of accolades for my musical talent. It wasn't good enough. I was a really good student. That wasn't good enough. I was never in trouble. That wasn't good enough. Because I had this thing deep inside of me that I was not okay. And, you know, I was looking out at life from the mess. And in order for me to really see clearly what's around me, I first need to experience the power which is within me. And that wasn't happening. Our thought life, my thought life, will create my current reality, even now. And it was doing it back then. I had no conscious contact with God. I'm a cradle Catholic, but after my mom died, I kind of just knew this God was a liar. He was cruel. He was unjust. And I case build a whole bunch to get away from this God. And I walked away. If can never literally be separated from that power which we're connected to, but it was this conscious separation. God is there and I'm here, and God is for women and children, not for men. And off I went into this life of self-reliance, and alcohol worked. The problem is, once I picked up a drink, I couldn't stop. And we all talk about that. That's not an embellishment. It seemed to be I was driven back to the first drink, and I couldn't get away from the second drink. It screamed louder. And whatever happened after that was a result of alcoholism dragging me wherever it wanted to. There were plenty of times when I was walking into a liquor store saying, this is not a good idea. I should not do this. Right out of treatment, clean and sober, right out of treatment, walk into a liquor store, because that's what my mind does. It will pay any price tomorrow to seek comfort right now. And I was always uncomfortable. The most insane thing I'll ever do in my life is from a place called sober. And that's pick up another drink. And alcoholism really doesn't care how long I'm sober, how often I speak, or who the sponsor is, and it goes on. It really is not impressed. Its mission is to take me back to that, which is killing me. And alcoholism will go underground and resurface in other areas. There's sex sprees and food sprees and money sprees and ad infinitum. So I get into my first treatment center. I get discharged by 28 days later. I'm drunk in an hour. I get into my second treatment center. I'm drunk in an hour. And the longest amount of sobriety I had in my first six treatment centers was 2 days of sobriety. Ironically, after the longest stay in a treatment, which was 9 weeks, my fifth treatment center was 9 weeks. Is you can't go home, you're in serious trouble. 9 weeks later, I'm discharged, and 2 days later, I'm drunk. And that's the length of my sobriety from 18 to 28 years old. In and out of treatment, picking up a drink at 14 to 28. Let's put it this way. If I wasn't locked up or in treatment, I was drunk, high, both, or in the pursuit of doing that. I don't have a story where I had 30 days or 90 days and picked up. So I get into my seventh treatment center in 1988, June of 88, and I'm living in an abandoned building. And one of those bums you would see on the street panhandling tore up from the floor up. And I looked the part. I was filthy. I hadn't bathed in God knows how long. And my clothes were filthy, and I had was wearing construction boots, and the right boot had no front. I looked the part. And over and over and over again, it was the daily humiliations, the degradation and stealing and panhandling, getting slapped around and the cops harassing, and just the whole life, that life. Now, I want to be clear. We can have that kind of life internally, living on Park Avenue, making a six-figure income. My conditions around me, my external conditions pointed at me, I'm in trouble. But I've met lots of folks over the last almost 36 years who had high-paying jobs, who had really fancy houses and put their kids through school, and they were still in the gutter emotionally. Pain is pain. It really doesn't make a difference. Park Avenue, park bench. For me, I landed pretty much on a park bench. And in 1988, it was June 23rd, which I had to be told it was the month of June. I knew the year, and I had to be told the date when I got into my seventh treatment center because I was oblivious to all of it. Days just rolled into each other. And there was nothing to look forward to other than more pain and misery and lots of regrets following me wherever I went. And when I got into my seven treatment center, they said something like, today's the first day of the rest of your life. Isn't that wonderful? And I said, not really, man. I'm thinking about homicide or suicide. That's where I'm at right now. I didn't see sobriety coming. What happened to me in this hallway, when I came to, Bill talks about the morning terror and madness were on him. That was a daily occurrence. I do not identify with folks who say they partied for a long time. I don't even know what that means. Bill says the courage to do battle was not there. It was a battle every day for me. And I made a plea to this God who I despised in this hallway on June 23rd. And everything began to change. I got surrendered in the back of that hallway. And when step 12 talks about having had a spiritual awakening, it's almost probably the biggest promise in the book that as the result of the steps, I will be transformed. But the pilot light gets turned on for many of us in our worst moment. It's right before we're hit with sobriety, our first day sober. And it doesn't feel very godly. It doesn't even look godly, but something has shifted. And that's what happened to me. And I beg God to take me from this. I don't want to die. And I go to my seven treatment center and they sent me to Minnesota. And I start to hear something that I never heard before. I wasn't, God kind of close the ears to the mind and open up the ears to the soul. Little by slowly, I realized how spiritually deaf I was, and God kind of unplugged this stuff. And I was hearing people share, and I'm sure they said these things every time I was in treatment and they took us to meetings, but now I was hearing with the soul rather than the head, which would discount everything. And a year later, I was brought back to New York, and I was brought to my first home group, and I found the sponsor, and the journey began in this big book, a beautiful big book. And as I started to walk through the steps, things started to change. My point of view, my perceptions and conceptions on life, looking back on it. At the time, it was just, I was operating different. I didn't realize they were these little awakenings, the little God winks. Looking back on it now, they were awakenings. I was clearing up. I was starting to travel light. And what my sponsor, my very first sponsor, threw me into almost immediately is what he called 10 steps. Now, some folks write a 10-step, some folks don't. I'm not here to create a debate. I was brought up with putting pen to paper. That's how I was brought up with, for better or worse, for me, it was better with very, very structured, mechanical, disciplined sponsors. They were bulldogs. And that's exactly what I needed at the time. I had a sponsor who put me on call times. We'd meet once a week at home group. But he had me on call times 3 times a week. He gave me a 15-minute window. If I missed 15 minutes, he wouldn't take the call. And when I would call him up and say, this is going on and that's going on, he would say, where's your inventory? And if I didn't have it, he'd say, call me back when you completed the inventory. Now, this doesn't work for everyone, but it certainly worked for me. And I'm just here to share my story. As my sponsor says, I'm not a model, nor am I an example. I'm just here to share with you where I've been and what has happened and where I am right now. And so I got to take a look at what our step 10 talks about is we go to God at once. We discuss it with someone immediately. What my sponsor had me do besides him was have two other immediately men who I gave spiritual consent to and says, listen, if I'm caught, if I'm jammed up with something, can I call you with an inventory? And I would share them what's going on. As the years moved on, there were plenty of times I called a sponsor. I was so irate, so angry, so fearful. I said, I don't have anything on paper, but you got to hear what I'm talking about. And they'd walk me through that. What do I do with my day? Bill in the 12 and 12 says something so profound about the emotional hangover. You know, today's Tuesday, I could be walking around with Monday all over me because I didn't address any resentments or fears or things that were going on. And maybe I owe an amends that I don't really want to get to. And so I have this life of secrecy. And I start to isolate because I'm not being transparent with at least one other person. And when that happens, I start to travel heavy and I start to isolate and I start to suffer. Because I'm, even though I'm in a meeting with 200 people, maybe I'm giving a lead at a meeting, I'm not connected to you because I'm really consumed with me. I'm thinking more about me than anything else. I'm thinking more about me than God. I'm thinking more about me. And my aliveness, little by slowly, starts to die. I'm consumed with me. My plans and designs become paramount. And depending on how spiritually fit I am will really determine what I do with the thoughts that come by all the time. I mean, the thoughts are coming constantly. While you're listening to me, I'm sure the mind is wandering every once in a while thinking about something else. We're driving. Do you ever drive in your car on the way to a meeting and you're speaking to like 45 people in the car who are not even there? Wake up. Do you ever do this? Wake up in the morning, soon as the eyes open, you're right in the middle of a heated argument with somebody who died 20 years ago. Or I'm looking at what's going to happen today. I know what's going to happen at work today, and I'm ready for them. I'm lock and load. As soon as I walk in, when I get to home group and old grumpy Joe starts saying he doesn't want to hear about the big book, I'm going to tear into him. And it's 5 o'clock in the morning. Home group isn't until 8 o'clock tonight. And I walk with that all day long. I'm not useful to anyone. When I'm wrapped up in self, my desire to awaken is dead. my desire to grow in understanding and effectiveness is stopped because I'm consumed with me about where I'm supposed to be going, what I'm supposed to be doing. And I've isolated from you. When I start to isolate from you and that kind of pain starts to happen in isolation, I'm going to a meeting and I can't connect. I forfeit every invitation that God is sending me because I can't hear it anymore. I become prey to temptation to deal with this pain that I'm in, this self-caused, self-inflicted pain. And here comes a food spree. Here comes a gambling spree. Here comes a sex spree. Here comes a spree. And it gives me relief for a little while, only to be overwhelmed by more guilt, remorse, and anger that enslaves me, forgetting that God will liberate me. When we go to meetings, I know I make a lot of meetings, and 90% of the meetings, they read how it works. And it's important. I'm thinking of a new person. There's a young lady here with 8 days, I think she said, or 5 days. And we read how it works, and it's important to read how it works. But if I was mayor of AA, I would throw this at a newcomer. Our 10-step promises are incredibly powerful and flies in the face of logic. That I walk into Alcoholics Anonymous, consume with me, consume with the thinking of drinking again, even though it's killing me. And step 10 promises this: we cease fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. And what I need to take a look at with 35 years sober, who am I wrestling with in my mind? Who am I fighting with inwardly in my mind? I have a tension when I think of John O'Mary. I have tension when John O'Mary walks in the room because I don't like what they represent. I'm the one who has the problem. Forgive them, change me, God. It's me. It's me who's looking and judging and critiquing, and I put plaque on my soul. It says, for by this time, sanity will have returned. We're about to enter a place called recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Back in step 2, we're talking about came to believe that a power. And now it'll turn into came to believe in this power that God could and has now restore me to sanity. It says, I'll seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, I recoil from it as from a hot flame. I react sanely and normally. It says, and this has happened automatically. This merciful God is doing this for me as the result of entering the world of the spirit. I have to think the drink through, play the tape to the end, keep it green, remember I come from. It's part of the package. I will see my new attitude toward liquor as being given to me without any thought or effort on my part. It just comes. This is the miracle of it. I'm not fighting it. I'm not avoiding temptation. I feel as though I've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We haven't even sworn this stuff off. And here it is. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. I'm sitting with a youngin with a couple of days back who can't get out of his own way. And I said, this is what you're in for. What tremendous promise. And so what I do with 10-step is I do my 11-step on awakening. And I do my 11-step when I retire at night and I do a review. And it starts with prayer and meditation. But that, when the book says on awakening and retiring at night, that's just covering my butt. There's a whole bunch of hours during the day that I could be turning in order to go out. And that's where step 10 plays. If we look at 10 and 11, they kind of crisscross in a lot of spots. But what am I doing throughout the day? Become agitated, doubtful, resentful, selfish, self-seeking. What's going on? Is the day gotten heavy? And so what I like to do is follow instructions, but I've been doing a long time. I turn to God at once. I don't tell him, you remove this at once, but at once I turn to God. It's my first move. The same power that gets me sober, am I going to other places to keep me happy, joyous, and free? Or am I turning back to that power called God? If I start to get consumed with me, my mouth speaks what my heart is full of, and it sounds angry, it looks angry, it's kind of icky, and it's like you're wondering what's going on with Pete. It's because I'm loaded with me again. It says I discuss it with someone immediately. I resolutely turn my thoughts to someone I can help. If I've harmed anyone, I need to make amends. And when I look at step 10, I'm doing a daily 4 through 9. And then it tells me love and tolerance of others is our code. I love this one. How can I practice love and tolerance if I'm consumed with me and my resentments and my fears, and it goes on and on and on? I'm praying for forgiveness for someone that has really irritated me. But when I really examine the prayer, I'm going through the motions asking forgiveness because that sounds real good. I'll impress God with that. But what I'm secretly looking to hope for is that this person just changes their behavior and I can get on with my life. So what I do in with an inventory and in my morning meditation, it's a total surrender to whatever it is. My job is not to have the world fit me, but somehow fit in there. But not to conform to some of the nonsense going on. Scripture talks about this, that we need to be transformed, but never conform to what the world is telling us to do, because that they never have it right. And God has given us each an equal portion of his faith, of faith in him, and how I cultivate that is up to me. I can't do any of that if I'm walking around full of me. Here's my analysis, my analogy for what happens if I don't do a 10 step. So if I put a sheet of loose leaf in the doorway, that doorway is going to be unaffected. It'll open and close. If I put 2 or 3 sheets of loose leaf in the doorway, I wonder if newcomers even know what loose leaf paper is, because everything's on app now. I just gave my age away. I know Marty knows what I'm talking about. But if I got a couple of sheets of paper and put it in the doorway, that doorway is going to operate, open and close. But if I put 10 or 15 sheets of paper in my doorway, it's not working. I got to kind of pull it closed and it's going to get jammed to open. It's not working. It's jammed up. Well, I have one resentment, one fear. The mind's going to say, it's really no big deal. We'll figure it out later, which begets another one, which begets another one, which begets another one. And one day I walk into a meeting and you look at me and say, what? What's going on with you? And I don't even know where to start. We know how that sounds when a newcomer talks to us and they cover the entire map of the planet in about 2 minutes and they can't really lay their hand on what's going on. It's just too much. Thank God for 4 through 9. I don't need to do that at this stage of my life or in the sobriety journey. It just might kill me. I find the longer I'm sober and the older I'm getting, it seems to be I need a lot more God in my life. There's a lot more things to be tempted to, a lot more things to get important, like money, property, and prestige. Turned 65 in July, and I'm thinking, what haven't I not accomplished yet to make me feel okay? And God says, I don't need you to do any of that. Just go help a drunk. You'll be fulfilled. I see that clearly when I'm traveling light and operating out of a 10 step. It also tells me in step 10, not to rest on my laurels. I'm headed for trouble if we do. I can't rest on my accomplishments of what I did an hour ago, last week, or last year. That was then. This is now. I had a sponsor, Mark H., and he would call me up and he would say, did you eat today? And I'd look at him, you know, I look at the phone and say, what is he smoking? Of course I ate today. He said, why did you eat today if you ate yesterday? I can't rely on yesterday's food to keep me nourished today. Each day, I need to carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. His will, not mine, be done. This is right out of our book. And that's how I get my soul food, prayer, meditation, and servicing others. How am I getting soul food? It's so easy for me, I'll speak for me, to get wrapped up in the current events in the planet right now. The world is nuts. I think everyone will agree with me, no matter what side of political party you're on, the world's insane right now. My country's upside down. I never saw it so violent. How do I navigate through that without being a crusader for what I think is supposed to be good, a crusader for an AA, to having a plain language big book come on? My phone and my private messages on Facebook was blowing up. It was a civil war happening in AA by people I thought were walking spiritually fit. How do you navigate through this? Take a side? There goes a life of contemplation if I'm doing that. I need to be in the position of neutrality, safe and protected, so I can be objective. And when I vote yes or no, it's coming from a soulful place, not a mind full of fear place. How can I have a relationship with anyone if I'm too soon with me, because it's going to come out? Resentment's the one thing that destroys my opponent or anything else. It says to drink is to die. Do I still believe that? Because if I don't, I'm not going to do inventory. I'm going to cut back on prayer and meditation, and I start to get away from step one rather than deeper into step one. I've seen this happen many times. I've written lots of fear inventory. My dad passed away in July, and I was not angry with God. We knew it was going to happen. But I wrote a lot of fear inventory because my dad and I have been so close for most of my sobriety. He was my hero. And I couldn't talk to him anymore. And I will tell you, this past week has been difficult because I'm missing my dad a lot. And I travel a lot. I get to a lot of conferences. And on Monday, I'd get back from a conference on Sunday. And on Monday, at noontime, without fail, my phone would ring. It'd be my old man. And he would say, he would usually open it, "Welcome home." That would be his thing. "How was the conference? Did Marion go with you? Did you see some of your friends? How was your flight?" Just a parent making conversation, checking up. But every Monday at noon, my phone would ring. And my first conference after my dad passed, my phone didn't ring on Monday. And the following conference on Monday, I got back from the phone didn't ring. And so I'm looking at, oh my God, I can't talk to my dad. And I got angry and afraid. And so I prayed. And I wrote inventory, and I called a sponsor, and I called a couple of men. My immediately men says, "Here's where I'm at. I feel like a 10-year-old kid whose dad didn't pick him up after school. I'm going to be 65. I'm feeling a little lost, like I'm walking on one leg." And I spoke to one particular friend of mine who lost his mom during COVID, and he knew exactly what I was talking about. It's a natural process of grieving before my mind took me down the rabbit. And missing someone you love, well, that's kind of how it goes. And so I chopped it in the corner, and I do these inventories. I share with someone all the time. I don't keep the, but then it becomes sins of omission. I have stuff going on. I'm writing the inventory, and it's going in the top drawer. I like to share this stuff. The best teacher I ever had in this whole journey with inventory was a sponsor I had, Mark Houston. He was able to see things that I couldn't see and really was able to open up. I'll close with this. Really need to be cleaning up the wreckage of my past and amends, being thorough. As I'm cleaning up the wreckage of my past, it says we've entered the world of the spirit. I can't enter the world of the spirit if I'm still wearing all yesterday on me and my past. How can I live now knowing how I lived then? So as I'm cleaning up the wreckage of my past with amends, little by slowly, God's time, God's way, I just find myself in another place. The world of the spirit is an interesting place to live in. Many of us out here can talk about it. Just don't see and hear and act like we used to. There's a spirit of forgiveness that's given us, a spirit of mercy that's been given us. I fall short, but I get back in the saddle and keep riding. Quite frankly, not only God's love and God's peace and so, but it's God's mercy where else am I going to go? If God pats me on the fan, he says, get back in the game. It'll be all right. And get to a meeting and go help someone. And my job is to stay sober and help another alcoholic achieve sobriety. And I get free enough to do that. I get free for me. The freedom I'm seeking is no longer for me, but from me. Yeah? It's from me. And the further away I am from me and the more that self dies, the more I'm in the light. And as this gentleman, Chuck C., would say, I can only do as good as the light I'm standing in. I get away from me. I get space from me. Self starts to die. And I'm traveling really light. And I have to accomplish great things, come up with a cure for disease, invent a new app to make money off of. It just can be being a good husband to my wife, being a good brother to my brothers, good member of good standing in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I go to work, I work. I mean, sometimes that's all it comes down to. How did I do today? How's the ledger shape up, Bill would say? A lot more positives than negatives. I had a great day. It's vastly different than the way I came in here. So the only thing that God wants is my soul. Yeah, I give him my soul and he gives me a life. I give him my life and he gives me purpose. I give him my sinfulness. He gives me forgiveness. I give him my drunkenness. He gives me sobriety. I give him my sobriety, gives me you, Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm way overpaid and overblessed, but I'll take it. It beats the way I used to live. So I think I'm out of time. That's all I got. Thanks for listening. Peace.
Awesome. Thank you so much.